Book Choice, Publisher's Choice with Paige Nick.
You're tuned on Fine Music Radio. Hi there, my name is Paige Nick. I'm the host of this show. This is an hour-long show we bring you every second Tuesday, filled with reviews of some of the hottest new titles on shelves today. In today's show, we have three must-read fiction titles. We also have some non-fiction. We've got a review of a book on the wildlife of the Serengeti, and we have two big interviews. The first is with Johan Faerie, an author of a book called Our Long Walk to Economic Freedom. Perhaps it should be called Our Long, 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 Long Walk to Economic Freedom. And the second big interview we've got today is with Joanne Hitchens, who is an author, an editor, and a publisher in South Africa. And every year, or just about every year, she brings out a short, sharp stories anthology. And the one she's just brought out this year is called One Life. And it's a whole host of South African writers get together. They write short stories. They enter to have them included in this anthology. Joanne picks the best. They edit them. And they pull together this incredible anthology. And every year it has a different theme. Last year the theme was fluid, which was all about gender fluidity and life fluidity. And this year it's about one life, YOLO. You only have one life, so you got to live it. So Joanne is here and she's chatting to Vanessa Levenstein right at the end of the show about this incredible anthology. So we've got a lot going on because in between all of that, we've also got some very fine music, which is brought to us by Mzu Makete, the man with the incredible voice and the incredible taste in music. And as always, our show is sponsored by Exclusive Books. So we're very lucky. We've got some great reviewers. We've got some wonderful authors. We have these publishers who send us these books so that we can review them and tell you all about them. And we have a whole hour to do it in, which is a real luxury and it's a real joy. Welcome to the show. Let's start off with some music and then we're going to come back and we're going to go straight into the books. This first track is My Baby Just Cares For Me. Or in our case, My Baby Just Cares For Books, and it's by 8 Mrs. Croon.
My baby don't care for shows. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby just cares for me. Miss Taylor is not a star, and even Lana Turner's smile, there is something he can see. He can see. Ooh, my baby don't care. Who knows it? He don't care. Who knows? My baby just cares for me. Yeah.
Welcome back. That was our first track of the show. You're tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. And my name is Paige Nick, and I'm your host. And if you enjoyed that song, it was My Baby Just Cares For Me by 8 Mrs. Croon. So there isn't a second to waste because we only have an hour, which, if you love books, isn't long enough. We want to talk about books for 17 hours. But we only got an hour, so let's get going. Our first review is by Shirley Guler, and it's a book called How to Solve Your Own Murder. It's by Kristen Perrin. This is a book that I have read, and it's a subject I'm very interested in. And I read the back cover blurb when they sent it out, and I wrote to the publisher, and I said, I really want to read this one. And they sent it to me, and I really enjoyed it. It's quite twisty and turny, and a woman finds out that she's going to be murdered one day, and she basically spends her entire life trying to figure out who's going to murder her. And it's kind of interesting, and it also jumps between timelines. So her niece comes to try and solve the crime after she's been murdered already. So it isn't a spoiler to tell you that she does die in the end, because she dies in the beginning. Let me hand over to Shirley Guler, who can hopefully do a much better job of reviewing this book than I've just done. Welcome to the show, Shirley Guler, and How to Solve Your Own Murder by Kristen Perrin.
What a perfect book to spend your holiday gift book voucher on. How to Solve Your Own Murder by Kristen Perrin ticks all the boxes. It's a puzzle, smart, simply delightful, and far from simple, and a fun read. It's like a random riddle starting with a fortune teller's prophecy, seeing how it plays out and ending with a solution or two. It's full of secrets to be exposed and things crying out for explanations or idiosyncratic crazy details, like a filing system in which a man is found not under his surname or even his first name, but tantalizingly under the letter I for infidelity. And then, of course, there's a drawer full of information filed there. It's cryptically clever with credible characters. It's not a spoiler to tell you that pitting two of them against each other competing to solve the central figure's murder, an instruction from the grave, with the highest possible stakes, is brilliant. While your money is clearly on a specific one to win, the race never lets up, because if neither solve the puzzle, then the estate ends up like a Trump resort, which no one, except perhaps Trumpites, wants. Everyone is a suspect, even the two who are fighting to inherit, and everyone has a plausible reason for murder. There are motives galore, from jealousy to revenge to greed, and there are the normal factors too: loyalty, teenage rivalries, teen pregnancies, questionable parentage, hemlock, clothes swapping, evidence tampering, wife swapping in a relatively minor way, drug abuse, weed merchandise, Rolls Royces versus Oxfam shops. So many extremes. In other words, all the foibles of a small English inbred village where everyone knows everyone else and everything about their business, private or otherwise. Except they don't know who did it. That is, who murdered the lady of the manor, and thus the lady of the title, dead after a prophecy that had captivated, scared and maddened her for 60 years was finally fulfilled. Secrets are prized open, relationships are skewed and skewered, and nothing is really what it seems at first. Diaries and scrapbooks from 1966 and a murder board or two worthy of Scotland Yard all have a role to play. I will say this for Kristen Perrin. In this, her debut adult novel, she has a real winner, and I can't wait to see what she comes up with next.
Thank you, Shirley. As I suspected, you did a way better job than me. I shouldn't have been allowed to do that. That is a very good novel, and you summed it up much better than I ever could. Next up, Beryl Eichenberger joins us, and we've got another beautiful piece of fiction on the show. It's called All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker. So we've gone from quite light and thrillery and twistery to something a little bit more serious with All the Colors of the Dark. And I've read a lot of great reviews on this title, so it's one that is on my to-read list. Beryl, what did you think of All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker?
Abduction. Something we're very familiar with. Young girls snatched from the street, their homes, their schools, taken for nefarious means. The reasons why the perpetrator selects these girls, unknown. So many never seen again alive. Their bodies sometimes recovered to give their families closure. Or no trace. Ever. All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker explores what can happen when a brave boy saves a young girl from a predator, only to be taken himself, and how, when he is found, this horrific experience leads him on a path to try and find missing girls, give them a face, and give families some hope. It's one of those books that you'll want to keep on your shelf. It had the feeling of the story of Edgar Sawtell, ranging the American landscape, sweeping through the South, touching the North, carrying you with it. It's a modern-day pirate story, spanning 25 years from 1975 to 2001, an obsessive search for justice for those who cannot speak, navigating an unforgiving land to find answers, whatever it takes, not always within the law. I sank into this novel, hardly realizing that this was a thriller, but feeling my held breath sigh with satisfaction when I finally reached page 576. Yes, it is a fat book, but with such a depth of writing, imagery, and exploration that the pages turn swiftly. It's a story that has all the hallmarks of today, of young girls whose lives are stolen, the so often fruitless searches for them, but it's also a story of healing where art plays an important role. Missouri, 1975, in the small town of Montclair, we meet 13-year-old Patch, Joseph McCauley, so-called because he was born with one eye and wears a patch. He has a wardrobe of them and plays the pirate. Complete with skull and crossbones, he's a creative, introspective lad from a poor, one-parent home. His mother struggles to survive, her hope dying when Patch disappears. His best friend is a solitary, unconventional saint who keeps bees, lives with her grandmother Norma, local bus driver, and is a bright, perceptive child. But when Patch saves local beauty Misty Mayer, object of his desire, from abduction, the landscape of his life takes a rocky turn, because he is taken, thrown into a pitch-black room where colour can only be seen in his imagination, and that is fueled by the enigmatic Grace, whom he thinks is incarcerated with him. A hand in his, and she paints colour with her words. By the time he's found, all hope had been shelved, but it is the indefatigable saint, with her powers of detection, who frees him. His life over the next 25 years turns into a journey to find Grace, to assist families whose daughters are missing, by learning what he can about them, and then painting their portraits. Sammy, alcoholic, irreverent art gallery owner, has recognised this talent, supporting him and successfully launching him. But as Patch matures, his journeys, methods of funding, and his needs to avenge harm done to those he loves bring their own consequences, which he must endure. He's a disarming character, intelligent, methodical, unconventional, empathetic, justice-seeking. In this small town, we meet the salt of the earth southerners, Dr. Toombs, Chief Nix, Misty and her cohorts, imaginative, lively, and each with their own wisdom, the passing years bringing secrets to the surface in unpredictable ways. It's a character-driven novel. Hard to believe Whittaker is British, as there seemed to be a detectable southern drawl in the evocative prose, which drew me in. Life, in all its uneven fairness, went on. As summer bled out, the fall air brought a chrysalis of calm, greens seeded to browns and golds, painting the landscapes, the emotions, the incarceration, and the epic journey. Epic in all senses of the word, a love story without all the sloppiness, a search with all the excitement and red herrings, an obsession. A deep novel of exploration, plumbing the depths of human nature, and to what lengths people will go to find the truth. Absorbing, searing, surprising, shattering, it will take you down roads you never thought to travel. All the Colours of the Dark is by Chris Whittaker and is published by Orion.
Welcome back. That was While My Guitar Gently Weeps by James Grace. And you're tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. My name is Paige Nick. I host this show. And we come to you every second Tuesday, thanks to Exclusive Books, who are our wonderful sponsors. And we spend the hour chatting about the books we've been reading and the books we think you'll enjoy. We've got Rachel van der Pfeiffer up now. Rachel is our YA reviewer. YA stands for Young Adult. And Rachel's going to be talking about a book called Apocalypse Cow by O.R. Sorrell, which sounds kind of fun. And maybe you don't enjoy YA fiction yourself, but I urge you to have a closer listen to this review because there might be somebody in your life. You might need to buy a birthday present or a congratulations present, or you might just want to buy somebody the best present in the world for no reason at all, which is clearly a book. And you might think this sounds kind of fun and that they might enjoy it. Rachel, welcome to the show, and let's hear all about Apocalypse Cow by O.R. Sorrell.
Apocalypse Cow is a comedy dystopian novel by O.R. Sorrell. It's 2031, it hasn't rained in over a year, and is currently a heat wave in the middle of winter. Mao, however, is too busy being in love with her unfortunately straight best friend, Sasha, to even notice. It's harder to ignore, though, when mutant animals start attacking, especially when she becomes trapped in a mansion with the two worst enemies, while the animals outside become increasingly bloodthirsty. Apocalypse Cow was very silly, very funny, and very gory. Expect lightning bolt-shooting foxes, glow-in-the-dark mice, and rampaging squirrels. I really enjoyed the ensemble of different characters, and found Mal's best friend Nev particularly entertaining. It reminded me of the book Swarm, which I read last year. It had a very similar premise, although the books were taken in different directions, both of which I thoroughly enjoyed. I really hope more authors decide to insert comedy into their dystopian novels. I found it a wonderfully refreshing change in a genre that's become oversaturated with cliches. Apocalypse Cow is written by O.R. Sorrell and published by Guppy Books.
Thank you, Rachel. You know, a book makes such a great gift. And if you can't decide what to buy, if Rachel's review, if you weren't sure whether the person you want to buy it for will enjoy it, then a book voucher is the very next best thing. Exclusive Books have these great book vouchers. You can go pick it up. You can even get it online. Give somebody you love a book voucher and they will be grateful forever. Book is really such a great gift. It lasts a long time. It doesn't melt. It doesn't need to be refrigerated. It travels easily and it lights up the imagination. Right, so we go from one kind of animal fiction to another kind of animal nonfiction. John Hanks joins us next for our green segment of the show, our nature segment. And John will be talking about a book called Wildlife of Serengeti and Ngorongoro Conservation Area by Rupert Watson, which is brought to us by Strake Nature. I really enjoy John Hanks' nature segment, and I know we have a lot of listeners that are keen birders and keen wildlife spotters and keen lovers of nature. So this is an important segment, and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the show, John Hanks.
I have no doubt that the very mention of the name Serengeti will immediately resonate with the majority of our listeners, for its deserved reputation for the annual migration of well over 1 million wildebeest and thousands of zebra, a truly remarkable and unique spectacle. If you want to know more about this very special part of Africa and are even considering a visit to the area, then I'm going to give you my strongest possible recommendation for a book which has just been published by Strake Nature, with the title Wildlife of Serengeti and Ngorongoro Conservation Area. First, though, a little bit of history to clarify the title. The well-known grassy plains of the Serengeti National Park, an area of 15,000 square kilometres, was established in 1951, and the adjacent Ngorongoro Conservation Area was designated 8 years later. The two together constitute a UNESCO World Heritage Site and have become one of the world's most popular tourism destinations. If you want an excellent introduction to this area, then this is the book to get. It's been written by Rupert Watson, who's lived and worked in East Africa for over 40 years, with the exceptional collection of photographs collated by award-winning photographer Jean Duplessis. It profiles over 60 mammals, most of the more common and charismatic birds, 30 reptiles and amphibians, a range of interesting insects, and some of the more conspicuous trees, which any visitor cannot fail to notice, such as the sausage tree in the Candelabra Euphorbia. But where this book scores for me is that it's not only a most helpful field guide, but it's full of really interesting notes on most of the species covered. For example, how many people know that the name hippopotamus is a combination of two Greek words, namely hippo for horse and potamus for river? An apt name for an animal that spends most of the day wallowing in the water. The text for this species describes how the hippo leaves the water body, usually at night, often travelling more than 5 kilometres from their aquatic home, to graze and occasionally eat fruit. As another example, safari ants in East Africa have a justifiably fearsome reputation for their painful bite, but this can surprisingly put to good use. So powerful are these jaws that some traditional societies use them as sutures, getting the ant to bite, removing its body, leaving behind the ant's head with the jaws pinching the skin together. Can you believe it? Fascinating, but I'm not sure I would want to give that a try. I've no hesitation in giving this excellent and highly informative guide, superbly illustrated throughout, my strongest recommendation. The title again, Wildlife of Serengeti and Ngorongoro Conservation Area. The author is Rupert Watson. The photographs collated by Jean Dupercy and has just been published by Straight Nature, an imprint of Penguin Random House. And you can get a copy for 250 Rand.
Might seem crazy, what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Because I'm happy. Cutting off if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Cutting
Welcome back to the show. You're still tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio, and I am still Paige Nick, and I still love books too much, and I'm still going to carry on talking about them for at least another half an hour. Next up, we're coming just into our second half of the show. Oh, first I've got to tell you that that song, I'm so excited to talk about the books that I forgot what I'm supposed to tell you first. That song was Happy by Just Six, and our show is sponsored by Exclusive Books. Coming up next, we start with our very first interview of the show. We have two interviews on today's show. One of them is about nonfiction, and the other one is about a fiction title. The first one is Twangy Kalula, who's going to be chatting to Johan Fourie about his book that's called Our Long Walk to Economic Freedom. Don't know if we're there yet. It's going to be a very long walk, but let's see. So Johan Fourie is a professor of economics at Stellenbosch University. He's also a founding member of the African Economic History Network, and he's president of the Economic History Society of Southern Africa. So how he found the time to write this book, I'm not quite sure. He has published award-winning peer-reviewed articles. He's also a regular columnist for local newspapers. And I think his passion, as he says, is to equip the next generation of African scholars with the skills to benefit from the data revolution. So he's here and he's going to chat to Twangy Kalula about his new book, which is called Our Long Walk to Economic Freedom. Welcome to the show, Twangy Kalula and Johan Fourie.
If you're a notorious procrastinator like me, it is likely that you often find yourself pondering some interesting, random questions. Like, have you ever wondered how on earth rugby found its way to Japan, or why Indian Dairies and Lobola are same-same but different? Professor Johan Fourie's book, Our Long Walk to Economic Freedom, was released during the pandemic, and it attempted to answer many of these questions to explain why we're living better than our ancestors. But I must flag, it's not a trivia book. Rather, it's an accessible telling of our economic evolution over the last hundreds of thousands of years. So a lot has happened in the last 5 years, and the book is back. A new revised edition is now available. Firstly, welcome, Professor. What prompted you to revisit the book?
Thanks, Twangy. It's nice to be here. Yeah, it's a good question, given that it's only, I guess, 4 years. It was published first in 2021 and now early again in 2025. So, you know, listeners might wonder why so soon. So maybe just to mention that the book is a prescribed text in a course that I've been teaching for the last 15 odd years. And so, you know, figures outdate pretty quickly. There's lots of things that happened, as you said. And so there was actually a need to revise lots of it. And I thought, you know, I might as well add some of the more updated figures, but also actually add a couple of new chapters. So it turns out, I mean, obviously, you know, economic history seems like a dated science, right? The history doesn't really change that much, but actually there's lots of change in the literature on economic history. So a lot of the topics that I worked on previously or wrote about previously, that kind of updates, and I thought it would be good to revisit them and rewrite some of the chapters given the new literature.
And you're obviously an accomplished academic, and you mentioned that you teach from the book, but it resonates well with like a retail audience. Why do you think that is? Why do you think people are so fascinated in economic history? Because I've noticed there are quite a few economic historians, as it were, who are making it more accessible.
I mean, maybe the kind of origin story of the book would give you some clue. So it was COVID, and, you know, I used to teach this course, obviously, in person, and we had to move online. And so I just decided that, you know, online lectures are not the same, so I'll write up the chapters. And so I started writing it up. Obviously, I had a lot of time during COVID. And then the students, I would get their feedback. And one of the interesting things about their feedback was that they said, yeah, they enjoyed the chapters, but actually their parents or their siblings enjoyed the chapters even more. And then I realized maybe, you know, this is not just for a, you know, these are not just study notes. They actually might be onto something here for a commercial book. And I sent it to a publisher, and Tafelberg agreed that it was something that a bigger audience would enjoy. I mean, I must say the feedback from the first edition was very positive. I guess that's partly why they agreed to do a second edition as well. You know, it's written based on hardcore academic research, but it is written in a style that's more accessible. And, you know, I might even add like a little bit entertaining. The idea is to have fun doing economic history.
It's definitely more entertaining than the books I tried to grapple with when I attempted economics many years ago. So I definitely agree with that. And the one thing I found so interesting about the subtitle of your book is that, you know, you're kind of positioning it that we are living better than our ancestors. But when I visit my local bookstore, there's a caveman diet. You know, when I go and visit an older person, they're reminding me about how life was so much better way back when. Are we truly living better than our ancestors, especially when we consider all the other things we're grappling with in the world right
now?
Yeah,
that's true. Lecture started yesterday. So I started with the students saying, you know, you grew up in an era of South Africa where everything you basically encountered is kind of pessimistic or negative. These kids were born in 2005. So South Africa's GDP per capita is basically the same as it was back then. I think it's the same as in 2007. So they've lived in a country with zero economic growth, a country of load shedding, a country of corruption. So that's the only country they know. And so, you know, if you grow up in that environment, of course you're going to feel that the world is a terrible place, and maybe even quite pessimistic about the future. But, you know, if you just take a step back and you look at a longer run, then, you know, if you go back two or three ancestors, so 100 years or more, you realize that actually, you know, we live much, much better lives. We are much more affluent on average than our ancestors were, and it's all of our ancestors. And, you know, to just put a number on it, I know numbers doesn't tell always an easy story, but I do, you know, research, as you've said, on historical living standards. And in Cape Town in the early 20th century, the infant mortality rate was, for white residents, 1 in 5, and for colored residents, it was 1 in 3. Now, you know, the worst country in the world today is Niger or Chad in kind of North Africa, and that's 1 in 9. So living standards back then, put another number on that, is like, you know, 1 in 3 kids dying. So, you know, that's an incredibly high infant mortality rate compared to South Africa's infant mortality rate of 1 in 30 today, right? Yeah. So we're kind of 10 times better off than we were. And of course, Japan is like 1 in 300. So they're like 100 times better off. So we can still be better. Those ideas can both be true, that, you know, things are bad, that we still can do better, and that our lives are much better than they were before. All of those three things can both be true at the same time.
What makes your book unique, I guess, compared to similar books, you know, from other parts of the world, is that you really have centered Africa and South Africa in the telling of the story. And I was surprised by the interconnections, the global interconnections, which go, you know, way back, like they're far beyond just the last few decades. Is that something that you find people are often very surprised by, how interconnected the world is?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, you know, reading any other economic history text, that this is basically kind of where, again, the idea for this course, in fact, was born, was the, you know, reading any European or American textbook, you would basically, if Africa is mentioned, it's kind of the last chapter, and then it's about like how Africa has failed, which, you know, just it's such a dismal, I guess, you know, that's the origin of dismal science for economics, but it's just also kind of wrong. We've always been part of the world economy. We've always been, you know, interconnected, as you say, and it's not necessarily even with Europe. It's, you know, there's this ancient Indian Ocean trade, and of course also, you know, interactions within the African continent, which is of course massive. So I thought it was necessary to tell those stories. And again, like the idea of an economic history, you know, most people's idea, maybe this is a generalization, but this idea of a very static Africa, that there's like, you know, nothing really happens. And then there's colonialism, maybe slavery, colonialism, and then there's post-colonial era. And then like that's kind of the dynamic part of Africa's history. But in fact, you know, there's been lots of really fascinating things that have happened before, and I thought it would be useful to think about those things and maybe show why they happened and perhaps what the consequences would be. Mm. I think the problem that we have of any kind of history these days is that it's a lot kind of political history, yeah, or even kind of cultural history, and it was really important for me to show that, you know, economics explains a lot of things, not only how things come about, but also what the consequences, and the long-term consequences might be.
Thank you for doing that so well. You definitely made economic history entertaining. I feel like I took your course, and you equipped me with a lot of good bits of information for the next time I play 30 seconds. So that's great too. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Wanjing.
Our Long Walk to Economic Freedom by Johan Faurie was published by Tafelberg and retails for 365 Rand. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. That was Summertime by Buchanan. Coming up next, we've got our final interview and our final segment for the show. And today we're going back to fiction. Vanessa Levenstein is in the studio and she's chatting to Joanne Hitchens about her latest short, sharp stories collection, which is called One Life. So in December of 2023, Joanne Hitchens launched her seventh national short, sharp stories competition. In this, she puts out a call for writers to send in their short stories. She goes through these short stories with a team of editors. They select the very best ones and they bring out a collection. This year's collection is called You Only Live Once. When she put out that call for these short stories in December of 2023, Short Sharp Stories was hoping that writers would have fun with the theme of YOLO, You Only Live Once, because that phrase had started to become much more mainstream in lexicon. And the philosophy has proved itself enduring. Seize the day, you only live once. It needn't imply recklessness, but it's an invitation to focus on the now and appreciate what we have in this day and to appreciate and utilize our opportunities. So that just goes to show you how long this process takes. They put out the call for entries in December 2023. They spent the year in 2024 getting the stories in, workshopping them, editing them, getting them ready for publication, and now it's here. To give you an idea of what these stories are like, I can give you a little bit of a sum up. In one of them, a fraudster cashes out of a life of crime, a mother has a splendid affair in another one, a brave woman never gives up, a graffiti artist spray paints the city, a poignant friendship comes to a climax in a retirement home, a storyteller comprehends his true power, a friend delivers a heart-rending eulogy, a young South African searches for belonging in Hong Kong, and so much more. Each short story captures the unique moment and meaning of one life. So here we go again. Short Sharp Stories brings you another intriguing collection showcasing excellent and multifaceted South African literary talent. Vanessa Levenstein is here on the show chatting to Joanne Hitchens, who curated and edited this compilation and has brought it to us. Welcome to the show, you guys.
Joanne Hitchens is the founder of Short Sharp Stories. They showcase quality South African short fiction by both established and emerging writers. Joanne joins me today on Book Choice to talk about their latest book. It's called One Life, Short Stories, You Only Live Once, edited by Joanne and Karina Shirik. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
This volume contains 20 powerful yet very different stories. How many entries did you receive for it?
We received around 200 entries, which is around par for the course for every competition. And then we have readers who read the entries. We choose the stories that we feel are the top stories. And from those, we compile the edition.
What's the criteria for choosing the stories?
The criteria are simply that they have a very strong storyline, that there's a forward narrative, that they're well written. We, of course, are also looking for voice and we want diversity. And because we are dealing with emerging as well as established writers, we know that there's going to be a range of writing. So we are really looking for interesting stories that represent our South African uniqueness in a sense. And that's really what I love about the collection.
And I love the fact you've got Karen Jennings, who was long listed for a Booker Prize. And then, as you say, emerging writers. And they somehow seem to gel very well, all the stories. Did you take that into account when you were choosing them, how they would balance each other?
Yes, absolutely. The thing is, if we were going to only choose the prize-winning stories or those written by prize winners, it would be a very narrow selection of writers. And what we really want is to get people excited about writing. So we have Kensani Sayia, who lives in a little village in the Eastern Cape, and we have Juliet Mkete, who lives in Hankey, and she's just brought out her first crime novel. And as you said, we've got Karen Jennings, who's an internationally acclaimed writer. And for me, that is actually what makes these compilations exciting. We have all ages, all genders. And so for me, it really is a showcase of South Africa, in a sense, as well as our writers.
You Only Live Once, YOLO, could so easily get into a Pollyanna-type meme. Oh, this is great, let's seize the day, etc., etc. But a lot of them are very dark, which makes it so exciting and so unexpected.
Yes. In fact, we did have the two extremes. We had the Pollyanna-type stories, and then we had a lot of stories around death. People laughing till their dying breath type of thing. So we really needed to have a mix of those. And what we are really looking for is something that is a bit unexpected, that is original as well. So I'm glad that you picked that up.
How involved were you and Karina in the editing process?
Some writers, like Karen Jennings, for instance, writes practically a word-perfect prose. She is so practiced at it and has spent so many years writing that it's not necessary to edit her prose. But the newer emerging writers, people like Kensani and Juliet to a certain extent, might need a little bit more guidance. And the more they find their voice, the more they will be able to really write what they want to without the guidance of an editor.
And is this book a platform for these writers? Have you got previous success stories of somebody who was published and then went on to something else?
Oh, yes. So this is, I think, the eighth of these editions. In one of our early editions, Incredible Journey, we had two Kane Prize-listed authors, and Lidudu Malingani went on to win the Kane Prize that year. Bongani Corner was a runner-up. They both went to London. They hadn't traveled before, which was incredibly exciting for them. We've had a lot of international authors in the publications, and we've had a lot of great authors writing forwards for us, like Dion Meyer and Sindiwe Magona. And even Peter Dirk Ace wrote a foreword for us a few years ago when we did a collection on humorous stories. So there really is a whole lot of history behind the project. It went into a hiatus at one stage for a couple of years due to various issues, but it is back. And our issue last year called Fluid, Stories of the Freedom to Be, Crossing All Sorts of Boundaries, actually won the National Institute of Humanities and Social Sciences Award for Best Edited Volume. There we go.
That was very impressive.
Which was incredibly exciting. Flying to Joburg, receiving the prize, and just knowing that we're doing a great job.
You are doing a great job. I didn't read it in one night, as one sometimes does with a novel. I took my time reading it and savored each story and let it sink in a bit. And obviously some stories pop out more, depending where you are in your life.
Yes, and I always say that if any reader can find 10 stories that resonate with them, then we have done our job, because not everybody is going to enjoy every story. But what we do hope is that every story is well edited, that every story is riveting. So that happens on the editing side, but we love the voices of every one of these stories.
There was no weakest link.
That is so great to hear.
Somebody might be listening and think, ooh, I'm a writer, I want to be in the next volume. When is the next volume going to happen, and how can people contact you?
Okay, well, we have put out a call for our next volume, which is Light the Dark. Power is really the title of the collection, and that can be electricity, politics, whatever power means to you. And there is still 2 weeks to get a story in. We extended the deadline. So anyone who has a story, if you can send it to shortsharpstoriespower@gmail.com, we'd love to read your story, or to follow Short Sharp Stories on Facebook. All the details are there.
Okay, Short Sharp Stories on Facebook.
Yes.
Instagram?
Not yet. That is going to be this week's challenge.
Good for you. And the book's available at all leading booksellers?
It's at Exclusives, many of the independent bookstores, and it is also available from Short Sharp Stories as well, if people want to order direct from us.
We wish you and Short Sharp Stories a long run. Well done.
Thank you so much, Vanessa, and just so wonderful to be here. And we're very excited about our project.
There you go. If you're looking for an interesting read, if you want to support a whole pile of fantastic up-and-coming South African writers, this is an excellent collection, and we're pretty sure you'll enjoy it. We can recommend it. Before we go, I want to tell you about what I've been reading. I started with a book. It's called Orbital by Samantha Harvey. Started my February reading. And this is a book that won the Booker Prize in 2024. So it's had a huge amount of chatter about it, and I've been very curious about it. I've read lots and lots of reviews. It's not my normal kind of read, so I was very interested and very curious to get my hands on it. And I can honestly say, after reading Orbital by Samantha Harvey, I now understand our planet completely. By which I mean I realize how very little I understand it at all. Orbital is a pivotal work. It's about six people who are in space. They're American, two Russians, Japanese, British, and Italian. There are two women and four men in this spacecraft. In this little book, they orbit the Earth 16 times every day, watching, learning, doing their experiments, reporting back to Earth. And between them, they think back and forward. They float. They have their relationships. This is their new family. It's all they have. Their world has become very, very small and at the same time, very, very large. You know that saying that there's a fat person in a thin person's body? Well, Orbital by Samantha Harvey is like that. It's a big, fat, full, 1,000-page book stuck in the lightest 136-page read. This book will take you no time to read it all, but you'll want to stretch it out and reread paragraphs over and over again to make sense of them because they are so mind-blowing. One of the lines in this book was, "We matter greatly and not at all." And that just summed up the whole read for me, how we can be such a speck in the universe, and yet each of us so important. Our links, our connections, our memories are really important. So that's Orbital by Samantha Harvey. I can highly recommend it. Another book I'm reading right now, if you feel like something a little bit lighter, it's completely different. As they say, now for something completely different, is called A Serial Killer's Guide to Marriage, and it's by Asia McKay. This is a little domestic thriller, bit of domestic noir. It's about a married couple. They are ex-serial killers. They were both serial killers in their own right. They met one dark night in the streets of Paris. They fell instantly in love and they started serial killing together until she fell pregnant. Then they decided they needed to shelve their habit of serial killer and go straight. They moved to the suburbs and got a very boring life. But one of them doesn't want such a boring life anymore, and the book continues. It's a lovely, light, easy read. I'm very much enjoying it. And it's called A Serial Killer's Guide to Marriage by Asia McKay. If you're in the mood for something light and a quick and easy read, you can find both of these books I mentioned. In fact, you can find all the books on today's show in your local exclusive books. If you can't go into a store, you can find it online at the Exclusive Books website and they will deliver it to your door. Doesn't get better than that. And that brings us to the end of the show. You've been tuned into Book Choice with me, your host, Paige Nick. I have to thank Mzuma Keita, who pulls together the show and selects all the music for our show. I also want to thank Exclusive Books for being our wonderful sponsors and for sharing these incredible books with us. Both these books that I got from Exclusive Books recently, Orbital and A Serial Killer's Guide to Marriage, have both enriched my life and made me a happier person, although they've reminded me that I really don't have enough time to read. And I also want to thank you, our listener. Without you, there would be no show. I would like to thank Fine Music Radio for letting us come back every second week and chat about books for a whole hour. I have to thank all our reviewers and interviewers. You guys do such a great job every month, and I'm so incredibly grateful for you. And so we're going to play out now with On a Clear Day by Track 5. But no worries, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with our Book Choice, Publisher's Choice show. And until then, happy reading. Oh, and I have to tell you, if you missed any part of this show, we load the show as a podcast on fmr.co.za just about any minute from now, so you can download it and listen in your leisure. Right, we're playing out now for reals with On a Clear Day by Track 5. Thank you, Mzu. Happy reading, everyone. You feel part of everything.
please.